Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Why do you have that glazed expression on your face, Lil?
Too many numbers in that announcement.
It's time now for Midweek Drive Morning Edition to take another diversification and divertisement to the wonderful Emerald Isle and another Tipperary tale with Jenny Finch.
Hello there. This update is from the 3rd of October last year. Having come from the northeast of England, we're used to relatively short summers, but autumn seems to come early in Ireland. After the blazing, uncomfortably hot days in the middle of summer, it turned cooler. This was most welcome, to be honest. We were not properly set up for extreme weather and spent most of our efforts on keeping out the cold. The lack of opening windows in some rooms, coupled with the swarms of flies, made for some very uncomfortable days. We are removing the Leylandii trees soon, as they seem to be the favoured home for many of the swarms. We will also need to look at changing at least one of the windows in the kitchen diner. It is gloriously warm and sunny most days, just a bit too hot in summer. Something that actually opens in there would be welcome. I spotted the first signs of autumn weeks ago when I let the dogs out into the garden. The wires and posts behind the house were lined up with birds, all chattering merrily and pointing eastwards. Their numbers increased steadily for days. Swifts on one line, starlings on another. No one wants to mix with the starlings, it seems. Then just as suddenly, they were gone, the little traitors. The bird feeder was very quiet for a week or so before new birds began to arrive. Looking back, the emigrating birds had eaten a ridiculous amount over 2 weeks. I was refilling the feeders and fat balls every day, so I hope they all got there safely. Still, at least they know where they're going for the winter, which is more than can be said for the geese over the back. Every evening, a flock of about 40 birds fly over the house, calling and swooping low. Then the next morning, they're back, all the way from the lake about 6 kilometres away. Apparently, they arrived about 10 years ago and lost their leader who knew the way. After flapping around lost for several weeks, they settled into this routine and have been here ever since, spending days in the field and small pond across the road from us. One of the sad things I had to do this week is make some decisions about the wood. As the leaves turn brown and fall, I cannot put off deciding which trees are dead or dying. Leave it any longer and they'll all be bare. So it was out with a spray can yesterday. There is one double row of trees, mainly ash, that are all either dead or badly diseased. Some never came into leaf. Others put out a few sprouts but had black spots and splitting bark. I struggled through the deep undergrowth, marking these with pink spots. A whole slice of the wood will need to be removed, burned, and replaced. It's our very own death row. I hate to cut any of them, but it's better to have 75 healthy trees than 150 crowded, sickly specimens. Followers of the blog will record there was a missing episode at the end of September. Jackie had a couple of breathless episodes during the week, but we thought she'd just overdone things. It was a busy time, despite our efforts, with 4 days of builders and several runs into town. On Saturday, we went in to get our flu jabs, and our doctor decided she could go back to A&E to be checked over just in case. Back to Limerick. Oh, joy. And on a Saturday, too. Believe me, A&E on a Saturday is not the place you want to be. We were a bit more prepared, having gone back home to pack a bag in case she was admitted, and she was, at 2:30 on Sunday morning. I finally left the hospital as darkness fell and drove home, not knowing what was happening. Our wonderful friend Sharon had gone up to the house to let out the dogs and check they were all right, but I couldn't leave them alone any longer. Driving in rural Ireland at night is an experience for sure. It is completely dark, as there is no lighting outside the towns and no houses for miles. There are also no lines on the roads, let alone cat's eyes. The roads are too narrow for two cars to pass anyway. I was so tired and stressed, I actually missed the turning onto our track and had a horrible moment of panic. Was I lost? Had I any idea how to get home? I did get back, of course. Driving around the lanes in daylight, I'd mused on the number of houses with traffic cones outside the walls, or white rocks, or brightly coloured barrels. Now I know why. Next time I'm out, I'm nicking a cone from somewhere, or whitewashing a couple of decent-sized rocks. I got Jackie back on Wednesday after sterling work from the hospital. She will need to take things very easy for a while, but we hope she is now properly on the mend. I was in a bit of a state last weekend, wondering what was going to happen and unsure what I could write. I am just so happy now I can offer this positive outcome. So we will settle down, enjoy a calmer few weeks, and look to a better end to our first year in Ireland. It has been quite an adventure. After the past overly stressful and very unwelcome excitement of the last month, we are on the road back to normal, whatever that might be in these strange times. We are both still very tired, as recent events have taken most of our energy, but life does not stand still. In fact, here in Ireland, it tends to take advantage if it can. Whilst we maintained a little bit of progress in the woods, especially around the oak trees, the open spaces have exploded again. We had a week of showers, followed by a couple of mild, sunny days. The back plot, so smooth and ready for weed mats and planting, suddenly grew thistles as tall as I am. I know that's not all that tall, but there were hundreds of them, literally. Jackie had a long list of instructions from the hospital, chief of which was rest, followed by no hoovering, no lifting anything heavy over about a kilo, and not even making the bed. This is understandably irritating for someone so active. She had big plans for the land and the house, now on hold again. It also means we have to rely on my plodding efforts to tame the newly grown wilderness. It was vital we got it cleared, as we hope to have the solar panels installed soon. And that is so not happening in that jungle. I did not falter, but jumped straight in and booked a digger and Davy, our lovely builder. Once the land was cleared once more, I began the task of setting out weed mats over some of it. This is hard work, but strangely satisfying, raking out the worst roots, clipping back brambles, and removing stones. I'm not going to get it all done, but hopefully winter will put paid to a lot of the opportunistic plants. I've left most of the brambles with berries, as the birds will need these, and as I was digging away, I heard them in the surrounding trees. It sounded as if they were passing comment, waiting for me to go so they could come down and hunt for insects and grubs. I hope my work met with their approval. Someone suggested we put in sprouting potatoes, as these will deter or kill weeds. Any thoughts? I won't use weed killer, as it has such a terrible effect on birds and insects, especially bees. After carefully cultivating the dandelions around the house for weeks, I can't now poison the bees. I guess this is one fight that will go on for some time. all part of the joy of living in rural Ireland.
And indeed, obviously, keeping the joy going, Katie Rushworth, ace gardener and TV presenter, will be talking precisely about bees after we finish our session with Jenny today. So it all slots in together, which is wonderful. We've got Jessica Burtis from North Carolina, very hot North Carolina, it would seem, back with us as well. Jessica, I think if memory serves, when you were last in Ireland, you also had the joy of travelling by car at night. As thrilling as Jenny outlined?
Yeah, I had to go to the hospital. I had a concussion, so I did experience the Irish hospital system, which was interesting. But I am very glad that Jackie was back home, and I hope all is better now, that it's a few months later in the spring, and maybe the garden. I know spring tends to come a bit later in Ireland, but I hope that the garden is doing well and that the bees are enjoying themselves. I think it's very nice that you're taking the bees into account with like the pesticide use. I think that's really important. And I actually was getting an email last night from the Audubon Society about pesticides and birds, so it's nice hearing that somebody cares about that and, you know, wants to see their little animals that they care for doing well. How are you doing this month?
We're doing okay. Everything has gone completely batshit, if I can say that, Alex.
Oh, no.
We have deliberately left most of the dandelions, and we've got buttercups growing all along and daisies, and we're trying to plant a wildflower garden as well at the end. So we're doing our absolute very best to make it as healthy as possible, and we've got a lot of birds, and the bees actually the bees are doing well, and the birds actually diss us now. We can actually go out and walk around the garden, and the birds sit in the bird feeder and look at us and go, oh, it's you, okay, and just ignore us. It's wonderful.
You're part of their family now. You're part of the flock.
We're just the cooks. We just put the food out for them. But yes, you're right.
Yeah. I'm honestly not sure whether it's something to do with Ireland, but I mean, literally, as Jessica, well, actually, you can't test it because you've actually left us on last Wednesday's Midweek Drive Live. We have an Irish film director who drops the F-bomb, and now Jenny started cussing as well. It's just too much, really. You know, we just got to edit in all sorts of other areas here. I mean, I just think, goodness me, this is not good, especially on World Bee Day, because it is actually World Bee Day as we actually record this particular piece. And some of the facts that come out of World Bee Day, 93% of the nation, that's the United Kingdom, presumably excluding your part in this particular point, Jenny, want to take action in their lives in aid of the bee population. A quarter of people in the United Kingdom cannot recall seeing a bee since the start of the year. And indeed, 40% also want to make their garden or outdoor space more biodiverse in aid of the bee population. So we'll be hearing from a TV presenter for Love Your Garden, Katie Rushworth, who's got a few suggestions in terms of how bees can be developed. But, you know, clearly that whole sort of thing, apparently, even if you're living in a city, you can still introduce things which will actually impact the bee population, make sure that they can work through that. I wasn't aware, for instance, that bees actually see the colour red as black. So it's not great for sort of seeing that sort of line through there. So you need other sort of flowers and things to actually work through that. But let's face it, without the bees, we would not be here. See what I did there? Be here. yeah, well, if you could drop cussing routine, I could drop in bad puns. That's all I can say, James.
Fair enough.
I want to know, though, what on earth has happened to the leader of the geese? You know, I mean, the leader of the geese has lost the, I mean, you know, these geese looking around, had the goose effectively had enough? Had he decided that he'd gone completely? I mean, Jessica looks after ducklings in North Carolina. So is it a case of, you know, what has happened to the geese leader?
Very possibly shot and cooked around here. There is illegal shooting. Even though our area is designated a bird sanctuary, and even if you own the land, you're not supposed to shoot on it at all. It looks as if someone shot the goose, the leader of the goose, and left them all a little bit headless, but they seem to cope with the flying backwards and forwards bit quite well. They were chased off the land by somebody going and just shooting a shotgun over them illegally in the last couple of months, but they've started to come back again. which is wonderful. And there are just it's a big flock of about 40. They call them grayling geese over here, and they are protected. So I'm keeping a sharp eye on them, and I'll say something, even if the guy has got a shotgun, if he does it again.
Yeah, as well, especially given the wild geese is very much a classic movie with Roger Moore and Richard Harris back in the day. So that's a whole range of things from that sort of area. Okay, Jessica, any other thoughts or questions you want to put to Jenny before we actually head off into more beekeeping analogies?
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that you're very protective over the geese, and please be careful if somebody is after them. Geese are sometimes they're quite romantic birds. Actually, some of them mate for life, and they can adopt ducklings that aren't their own. They'll adopt some other goslings. It's very sweet. They're very, very caring animals. So I'm glad that they have a guardian angel. So I was curious about what your plans are for the summer in Ireland. Do you and Jackie have any plans going on?
And bear in mind, Jenny, that Jessica will be coming over to Ireland in the summer.
Yeah, so there's always an invite there. Yeah?
You'll have to try and find us. It's an interesting journey. You would be most welcome. All we're planning to do is we may have a couple of visitors from England, but that's a bit problematic at the moment with the travelling. We're just going to work on the wood. We've bought a small 3x2 meter greenhouse, and we're going to start growing some essentials of life like asparagus and raspberries, and of course potatoes. It is Ireland, so we're going to start. Yeah, you can never have enough potatoes. we're going to start gardening for food, and we've got a big herb trough that we're going to plant up as well, so we can have some nice fresh herbs.
I can't wait for all like the garden stories on here. I love it. I've been wanting to plant a garden, so I'm going to try and take some inspiration from you.
Have a look on the blog. We've got what used to be a little stone water trough running across the front of our land. And what we've done is dig out the rocks and the rats, fill it up with lots of soil. And it's now planted as a memorial garden for a friend of ours lost their little dog last year. So that's now Betsy's Corner. And people going past, jogging or riding horses, they often stop and go, "Love the flowers. Thank you. Love the flowers." And a lot of people plant the front of their houses, even on the other side of their hedges, to make it nice for passers-by. I think that's a lovely tradition.
That is. I love that. Speaking about the bees, I was hearing about how a lot of times, especially in the US, people focus on having lawns that are just plain grass. And that's seen as being beautiful, but it should be wildflowers and it should be trees. It should be things for nature that the bees can use. So it's really nice hearing that that's appreciated there and that people look forward to seeing, you know, some blooms happening.
Yes, the farmers actually leave the dandelions in their fields. There's completely yellow fields up until about this time of year. Nobody mows the silage until the dandelions have seeded. And I think that's really, really good.
That is.
Clearly, the gardening theme is continuing up next. We will have not one, but two extra gardeners. We've mentioned, obviously, we'll be connecting with the fabulous Katie Rushworth. We've also got Danny Clark, who had a whole career change to become an ace gardener as well. And he'll be talking about that as well. And also the importance of gardening. Plus, we've got a feature on mental health as well. All profanity free, I can actually guarantee, which is always good. For the moment, Jenny Pottymouth, Finch, huge thanks from that point of view. Keep on keeping on, and doubtless we'll connect again very soon. Likewise, Jessica as well. Bye for now. Gardening, it's such a wonderful thing without which we would probably not be here in any way, shape or form, going back to the Garden of Eden, arguably. But as we head through World Bee Day, how can we all take steps to protect our global system? And that, of course, is bee as in B-double-E day, as in our wonderful insect friends who effectively help us to exist and thrive and so on. And to actually talk us through this particular day, which is well worth acknowledging, we're delighted to welcome television presenter extraordinaire, the awesome Katie Rushworth. How are you, Katie?
I'm very well, Alex. Thank you.
Good. So, 93% of the nation want to take action in their lives in aid of the bee population. So it's not as though human beings aren't on the side of bees in this one, is it?
No, it's true. It's really nice to hear such kind of a positive uptake in people wanting to take action.
So allowing for that then, in terms of obviously taking that action and moving from desire to looking through the whole thing, what are the steps that we need to actually start putting in place, and how can we actually address something which initially I think was the work of fiction, or seemed to be the work of fiction, that first, of course, the bees start dying off, and without bees, there's a whole trigger of problems that start manifesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there are lots of different things we can do in the garden. Firstly, we can plant more plants that flower, especially things that flower at different times of year. So we know we want our gardens to look good in the summertime, but for bees, it's really important that we have flowers during the winter, early spring, and then again right into the autumn. So planting things that pollinators can feed from all year round is really important. And planting lots of things that are in blues and violets, because apparently bees can see more blue and violet colours, and also yellow. We want to kind of attract them in, so lots of colours like that are great, because apparently red is seen as black, so not so enticing to a bee. Then the use of pesticides and herbicides, I would absolutely encourage people to stop using, because they have been proven to really be super damaging to bees. So it's about kind of inviting predatory creatures in, like frogs and beetles, to deal with all our pests that we don't necessarily want in the garden, and kind of thinking about that whole cycle that we can become a part of, and having a balanced garden where nature kind of looks after itself, and therefore we get more bees.
Is it down to pesticides that effectively bees have been reducing in terms of numbers? I mean, you know, again, introduced with the best will in the world to effectively actually improve and develop the yields of agriculture and so on. And this is something I don't think anybody was quite expecting, really.
No, I don't think they were. But yeah, it has been, the science does show that it is super damaging to the bees. So, and there's also things like parasites and things out there which are not helping things, but it's definitely this loss of habitat from farming, because we're kind of over farming now, and loss of things like hedgerows and natural grasslands, wildflower meadows, and they're all being taken up by farming, as well as farming using pesticides and herbicides. So it's really not helping the situation. Plus, as humans, we drive more, we need more parking, so we're kind of taking up our front gardens with more paving and tarmac, and you know, kind of the modern world is encroaching a little bit too much into the bees' habitat. So it's really vitally important that if you don't have a garden, maybe you could go with a window box or a hanging basket, something that will encourage those bees in. Or you can also get involved in your community and maybe do help out in the green spaces there, and encourage your councils to stop using herbicides and pesticides as where they can.
A few years ago, I seem to recall talking to various folk at various country shows about colony collapse disorder. Is that something which is still a problem, or has that been put to one side, or is it still problematic?
Do you know what, Alex? I am not a bee expert, but in terms of inviting them into the garden, I can help you with that. But yeah, the colony collapsing is not something I'm sure of.
Well, let's move back to obviously what Comvita are actually doing in terms of obviously helping sustain, support and grow the bee population. I mean, Comvita, producers of course, the world famous Manuka honey. They've got a four pillar plan that effectively sort of puts this together in terms of ways forward. Now, you've already alluded, Katie, to some of the ways in which people, even without gardens, can actually start beginning to address this. Are there any other key points that you think need to be made and addressed to actually ensure that actually we can look forward in the 21st century to a thriving and healthy bee population?
Well, I think it's things like making sure that the honey you buy is ethically sourced. You know, companies like Convite are doing a lot. They're planting lots of native trees. They want to be carbon neutral. So kind of spending your money with companies that are, you know, really passionate about and providing for bees is really important. So, yeah, checking where you spend your pound and looking into the kind of other projects that they're doing. They're doing some amazing stuff worldwide with their honey. So, yeah, it's been making educated decisions.
As a garden designer and a gardener, Katie, do you think that actually the future is one of optimism, or should we actually be very wary as we head into the next quarter of the 21st century?
I think it's important to be realistic, but I do think there are hope. You know, 93% of the nation have said that they want to take action. Surely that's an amazing statistic. So here's hoping that they do, you know, that it's just kind of not an idea. It's about educating people into knowing why it's so important. We have to be realistic with the facts and hoping that, you know, they will take action. We can all, this is something we can all be a little bit responsible for and we can do something about.
And are there any other insects that actually we need to effectively sort of reevaluate? I mean, I think the ladybird a wee while ago got a bit of a rough deal and seemed to be problems. I mean, other sort of insects that actually are assets to our garden.
All kinds of insects are, you know, from beetles to frogs to lacewings. Lacewing larvae eat more larvae than aphid larvae than ladybirds do. But people kind of, you know, think that the ladybird is the champion aphid eater. But no, the lacewing does a sterling job at that as well. So it's really important that we have all kinds of flora and fauna in our garden because they all, you know, create this amazing natural cycle that we're all, as humans, so lucky to be part of.
And where can people go to find out further details, Katie, about how to actually help the bee population thrive in the world today?
Well, you can check the Convita website out. They've got lots of information on there about what they're doing to kind of support the bee population. And also, there's lots of wildlife gardening tips on my Instagram account, which is Katie_Gardens.
Katie Rushworth, garden design expert extraordinaire. Huge thanks and happy gardening, Katie.
Thank you, Alex. You too.
I think if you take in mind the average lifespan tends to be around about 70 to 80,000 days, it may not seem a lot. And maybe it's the old maxim that you always need to treat every day as though it were your last, because one day it will be. But enough of such possible maudlin talk. Let's actually talk about the fact that it's never actually too late to start a new career. And let's challenge those ageist stereotypes with indeed a soul who effectively became mega famous at the age of 53. So fantastic stuff there. He's now in his 60s. He's doing fantabulous stuff. He is, of course, TV gardener extraordinaire, Danny Clark. How are you, Danny?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Alex. Actually, it was 58 when I got noticed by TV.
Wow.
Well, not 53, so yeah.
It just goes to show time just sort of switches by. And again, you could say, what is age but a number? Because clearly you never quite know when that overnight success that took about five decades to achieve will literally occur.
Exactly. And I think the secret is just to keep your mind open. If you've got an open mind, things will come your way. And also positivity. That also plays into it.
Now, this research from Saga, of course, has also found that 71% of people over 50 believe that representation of their generation is focused on what they can't do rather than what they can do. That's a typical human thing, isn't it? Oh, you can't do this. You can't actually score the winning goal for Manchester City at Wembley because City are not in the final, obviously. But in terms of those sort of areas, it is a case of you need to emphasise the positive, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. Just be positive. And really, it's a question of not what you can't do, it's what you can do. So every day, when I wake up in the morning, I just think, you know, the first thing I do is I pinch myself and I think to myself, and I think, well, I'm still breathing. And everything else that comes my way is a bonus.
Absolutely. And you've been appointed, of course, Saga's new head of experience as part of the Experience is Everything campaign. And that is something which certainly over the years, people try to quantify it. They try to actually assess the whole thing. But really, there's no substitute for actually being able to have a certain amount of life experience, if only to actually appreciate that all things pass. And no matter how crazy that spreadsheet might appear to be, you can still actually do vital things with it.
Yeah, well, my role as Saga's new head of experience, I should be working with them over a 12-year period to actually define aging. You know, and basically to add my voice and perspective to their insight into people over 50.
And the other thing, of course, is you're going to be documenting your whole journey on the Instagram channel. Did you not feel as though you should actually go TikTok as well for this one, Danny?
Well, TikTok is not really my thing at the moment, but Instagram and Twitter, definitely yes. So basically, you know, the idea is just really to engage with people as much as I possibly can through that medium. And just really dispel the negativity that comes with the perception of aging. Because really, at the end of the day, getting older is a good thing because we can use our experience. And really, by what I mean by experience is that we know a lot more than we did, for example, yesterday.
And again, just looking towards that, is it just a kind of particularly human thing that we like to dismiss stereotypes about age and effectively, you know, we still at the back of our heads say, oh, I don't know if they're going to be up for this. Oh, I don't know if they're going to be ready to actually do this. Oh, they could be too old for that point of view. I mean, certainly in the media, of course, it's been rife for many years.
Well, it's just a state of mind, really. I mean, you know, you can be old at 40 and young at 70. I mean, I know 40-year-olds who are falling to bits, basically because they don't really look after themselves. But if you look after yourself and you have a positive frame of mind, aging, actually, in fact, to be honest with you, I look forward to the next stage of my life. I always have done, because experience, because I know more as I get older. And as long as I stay healthy, I can put things into action.
Maybe it's also a case that we should go back to that ban on the use of the O word and actually refer to people as experientially enhanced, or maybe my own personal favourite, chronologically gifted.
Yes.
Different flavour on the whole thing, but there we are. Yes. I mean, within your gardening world, et cetera, I mean, what was it that sort of created that life path shift from yourself in terms of obviously becoming much more connected with respect to instant gardener and so on, again, proving that you can make a career change at any age?
Well, you can make a career change at any age. And for me, it was, I reached midlife, I was about 40, I was in sales at the time, wasn't enjoying it very much because of the pressure. And I thought there must be more to getting older than doing what I was doing. So I decided to change my role and become a gardener. I mean, basically what I did was I changed my hobby into my profession. So, because I loved gardening. It's something that was very inherent to me from a young age. And although I was an amateur gardener, I mean, I was just looking after my own plot, I just got this random phone call from a lady who was looking for a gardener. She wanted somebody to come and work for her one day a week. She'd heard a rumour that I liked gardening. And I went along to see her. She was a larger-than-life character, Jo Bryant. And what she didn't know about gardening, put on the back of a postage stamp. And I worked for her one day a week. But the great thing about Jo is that she kind of changed my perspective in many ways. So, for example, I would arrive at her plot. She had 2 acres of garden, by the way. She had an all-year-round town. Her house was falling down, but she had a beautiful garden. But I would arrive at her plot one day. It'd be pouring down with rain. The skies would be grey. It'd be windy. And she could see by my body language, I didn't want to do any gardening that day. I just wanted to say, no, Danny, don't worry about today. Go home. Come back when the skies are blue and it's warm and we'll crack on with it. But she wouldn't. She would say, Danny, great to meet you. What a dramatic day. Feel that wind on your face. Isn't it fantastic? Doesn't that sky look a fabulous grey? And basically what she was doing is changing my perspective. And she was just saying, really, is that there's a beauty in everything if you wish to seek it. And, you know, and then I would just get on with my day with her, which was, you know, great.
Do you think as a culture we are still youth obsessed in the West in particular? Is there something which we've talked about for many a year, but even movies like Logan's Run suggest, well, once you're over 30, that's it, you should actually end it all.
I think we are youth obsessed, absolutely. I mean, you know, as we say, age is just a number. And, you know, I think older people do have, we're all going to get older at the end of the day. That, you know, from the day we're born, we're dying. So, we're all going to get older. And for some reason, I don't know why it is, we kind of think as being young as beautiful, whereas I think there's beauty in every stage of your life, whether you're in your 20s, in your 30s, or in your 40s. It's just all about perception. And I think that needs to change.
Well, I think we've actually done a little step, hopefully, towards rectifying that with this little piece. Saga.co.uk is the best place to go, Danny, to actually find out further details.
Yeah, that's the best place to go find the details. And also follow me on Instagram at The Black Gardener.
Well, of course, absolutely. Danny Clark, again, on Instagram, a general all-round superstar. I mean, any thoughts about changing your career again, Danny? I mean, would you be, you know, I mean, I'm sure in the not too distant future there'll be a vacancy for Prime Minister. Fancy that?
I don't know if I'd be vacancy for Prime Minister. I'm quite happy where I am at the moment as a garden designer and TV presenter.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Danny Clark, take care and keep on gardening.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Take care. Bye-bye.
Now, clearly, we live in troubled times. We live in worrying times and so on. But what about the next generation? We're already seeing, certainly in terms of the University of Lincoln, the home of Siren Radio, so many challenges with respect to student anxiety. But again, go back further, we see that 2/3 of children as young as 11 are experiencing regular anxiety, with school-aged children bearing the brunt of a mental health crisis caused by the pandemic, with almost half of parents now reporting that their child experiences frequent anxiety. So let's begin to address this and hopefully sort of see if there are any solutions to this, or do we just have to learn to live with it? And we're first of all delighted to welcome a wonderful risk expert from Zurich Municipal Insurance. That's Alex Bedford. How are you, Alex?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. Nice to see you today.
Excellent. And also, we've got a safeguarding expert as well. That's the wonderful Colin Stitt. Colin, of course, from Inequa.
Inique Safeguarding Group. Thanks, Inique. Alex, for having us.
Okay, well, good to get out with you, good stuff. And it is a really serious topic, this. Colin, if we can come to you first, because I see, as on the visual backdrop that you've got today, safer schools. I mean, clearly, children have always got worried or upset at certain times, etc. But this regular sense of anxiety and foreboding does seem to be a kind of 21st century phenomenon, possibly magnified by the likes of social media and so on.
I think you couldn't have put it better, Alex. I think that's very true. And you mentioned Safer Schools, and that's very much a partnership between yourselves at Anique Safeguarding Group and Zurich Municipal. And we've released these figures today that tell us a little bit more about the nature of the problem that we're facing. In fact, 42% of parents reporting that their child experiences frequent or anxiety compared to 30% in 2020. But also we see a rise again in parents reporting that their children are going online, and the two go hand in hand, and the risks go hand in hand. And we see these very much being not surprising figures, given the fact that we've of COVID, where everyone has been more online, trying to stay connected with one another. So there's been real benefits of technology, real benefits to social media throughout the pandemic. But also the flip side of that is it comes at actually a cost. It does come with risks associated with it. And children and young people that we know will go online looking for help and support, especially to alleviate their anxiety, but also when it comes to self-help and also their health and well-being.
I mean, looking at the top 10 reactions to anxiety that are experienced by UK children in the past year, becoming more irritable or short-tempered, becoming withdrawn, being unwilling to go to school, being unable to fall asleep or waking up frequently at night, going online or using their phone more. Actually, for those five, arguably, they've always been characteristics of children. But is this something which actually we've just noticed that actually there is a problem here? I mean, Alex, perhaps you'd like to take that one in terms of, you know, is it a case of we're now more aware of anxiety? We're more aware of the characteristics that are actually manifested within that and the challenges of being human?
I think there's a couple of things to note there. So one is that this survey did question parents of children aged 4 to 17. So it's identifying problems across that age range. They're particularly severe in children aged 11. They are the most anxious age group. And also 13-year-olds who have experienced the biggest increase in regular anxiety over the last 2 years, from the 12th most anxious group to the fourth most anxious today. So actually those signs of anxiety and stress are being picked up by more parents in more of the children across that age range is the key message here. So yes, they have always been the signs potentially of anxiety and stress, but we are seeing more and more of them. And parents are actually also experiencing the same anxiety and stress, and so struggling to support their children in some cases.
Mm. Colin, what's the solution, or is there a solution? Do we just have to actually learn to live with this?
Well, Alex, I think that the first point is the fact that we've got to understand the role social media plays. And I think for an older generation like ourselves, who understand life offline and without the internet, and we have to understand that the world our children and young people are growing up and living in is fundamentally converged. There's no longer, they don't differentiate between the offline and online. It's their world. It's how they make relationships, build relationships, stay connected, have fun and enjoyment. This world is very much converged. And so actually, we've got to understand that. So helping and educating and empowering parents and carers to understand that is going to be critically important if we are going to help them. That's the first thing that I should say. The second thing is that actually we need information. As a parent myself, we need sometimes information and encouragement to know what to do when our children and young people are worried, when they are anxious. Because as a parent myself, we can be so busy with life. Life is incredibly busy. Again, for many parents, they've been trying to juggle homeschooling as well as remaining in the job throughout the pandemic. It's a challenge. But actually, we owe it to our children and young people to actually make sure that we talk to them. And when I say that, I don't mean that glibly. I mean to give them our full attention, to understand what they're saying. We need to remain connected to them, because actually we can try to listen to our children and young people, and we do it with the intent to reply, not to understand. Somebody with again more wisdom than I once said, Alex, that most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. And the challenge for busy parents is that actually we need to take the time and listen to the concerns. and validate the concerns and the worries that our children might be facing, whether it's about school, whether it's about a social media post, whether it's about friendships or relationships, or again, their concern about what's happening in the news. We've got to take time and validate. We've got to create the space and try to understand what is going on with our children. We've got to understand what's going on. And then we've got to look to reassure them. We not only need to talk to them, but we need to give them that reassurance that we are there for them, that we don't judge them. So I think those are things that we can help alleviate and reassure. But it's really important, and my experience working with young people directly in pastoral environments is that young people want to talk, but at times they struggle to know how to express their emotions. They at times struggle to know who to express that safely to. And sometimes they take risks and express it to the wrong people. So it's really important that our children know who the trusted adults are in their life that they can talk to, whether that's at home, whether that's mom or dad, and that they were always going to be there to listen to, or whether that is someone in school, a teacher, a counsellor, or whether that's a youth leader, a police officer, a GP, or again, somebody completely anonymous, someone maybe like a Childline that they can talk to any time of the day. It's really important that our young people know that it's really healthy to talk and it's good to talk. And from my experience is that young people need to talk more rather than less. And we need to make sure that they have the environment and a safe, loving environment where they can feel like they can express themselves. And finally, I'll finish with this. For many young people, they maybe don't have the words to say, but actually we can give them other tools to be able to express their emotion. That might be writing it down. It might be an emotional journal. And with that, what we've done is we've pulled together a range of resources that we've collaborated together with Zurich Municipal, and we've made them available to all parents and carers for free on our website, www.rsaferschools.co.uk/anxiety support. And we've a range of resources to try and help parents, encourage parents about what they can do to support the child in their care.
Zurich Municipal is obviously a school's insurance specialist. Alex, you've been listening to obviously Colin's input with respect to that. Is it very much a case of prevention being better than cure? And is it a case of actually this is something where, as Colin's very loquaciously outlined there, basically, how do we actually start putting that in practice? Because as I said at the start of this piece, I deal with young people in the 18 to 22 and above bracket, basically. And I've seen, together with my colleagues, lots of changes in that. Certainly what's happening in the schools today is going to be hitting higher education, universities, FE, etc. tomorrow. So is this something which can usefully help from your own perspective?
Yeah. You're right. Zurich Municipal is a specialist schools insurer. We do also, as part of our education arm, insure many universities and further education colleges. We cover the whole breadth of the education institutions in the UK, and we very much see this as an indicator of future risk, potentially, for those higher and further education institutions, that if we don't try and work with our young people who are coming through the system now, that risk will be carried into their experience and the way that they are able to engage with their education as they go through. Again, as an insurer, we do have a risk management arm and a risk management focus, which absolutely, I would always say that's my background. Prevention is always better and cheaper than cure. So we work very much with our customers in partnership, bringing in specialists like Anique in the safeguarding and mental health world to not just be there if you have a sort of physical incident at your school, but also to work on those people risks. A school, a university is its people, it's not the buildings. So we need to very much make sure that we're working to understand and support our customers in responding to these risks. As I say, we have the Safer Schools app that we make available to our schools customers, curated by Anique at no extra cost, which covers safeguarding very widely, but also in response to this particular survey, as Colin referenced, making resources available through the Safer Schools website to give tips to that whole school community, parents, carers, pupils, about how to cope with the anxiety that we're seeing, how to have those conversations, or at least start those conversations, so that young people are supported and that we can try and alleviate that future risk for those other institutions.
And Alex, to jump in on that one, what we're seeing is schools taking hold of that information because they're craving it and wanting to upskill their staff. Because the best way to keep children and young people safer is to educate and empower them and the entire school community around them, their staff, their parents and carers, and making sure that they're all aware of being able to not only identify the signs, but also what the risks are. So prevention, absolutely. That's what our experience tells us. That's the best way that we can keep children and young people safer. And we're seeing that in your local area. Fantastic schools like Jukeries Academy, where they have taken hold of our Safer Schools app, and they have and taken the CPD courses in it regarding mental health, and made all of their staff complete that course, understanding what the signs and symptoms are, what their role and responsibilities as staff members are. And so very much educating and empowering that. So schools are taking this opportunity to do something about it. And it's great to see.
At least it's a start, which is the important thing. One's mindful, obviously, that there are parts of the world, certainly, where the stress factors are hugely greater in all sorts of ways. We won't go into that for obvious reasons. But Colin, could you actually wrap up in terms of just a reminder for how people can access the Safer Schools app and Iniqui?
Absolutely. So if you were looking for our resources on anxiety support, you can visit our website, www.rsaferschools.co.uk/anxiety support. And on that same website, if your school is insured by Zurich Municipal and you're not yet a Safer School, you're not accessing the resources, you can contact us to find out today if you're a Safer School and access all of these resources at no additional cost. Simply to you and I, it's free as part of your insurance with Zurich Municipal.
Colin Stitt from Iniqui Safeguarding Group and Alex Bedford from Zurich Municipal, huge thanks. Stay safe, be well, be healthy.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.